What's going on, Yakima? Dan Wise back here with Wise Media Group. And today we have an awesome guest. Many of you might know Jason White. He's kind of a love him or hate him kind of guy here in Yakima, ex-local politician and the founder of Yakima Reclaimed. So that is coming up next. Jason, good afternoon, good morning. It feels like morning to me, but I guess it's like actually late in the afternoon.
Evening.
So Jason White, ex-politician from, I guess, right around 17 to 21 here local in Yakima. You have no idea what we're going to talk about today. You just kind of agreed to come in off the cusp.
No clue.
We met some gentlemen that run the Rain Shadow Report who used to be in our building, and they started telling us about your background, your story. And I thought it would be really interesting to have you on because there's quite a bit of controversy that surrounds your name, seems to be.
That's for sure.
So for people that don't know who you are, like myself, I'm new to the area. Tell us a little bit about kind of your background, what makes you tick, and where you are today in life.
Yeah, well, I grew up here. I grew up a few blocks away from here, downtown Yakima on the Lower East Side. I live about three blocks away from where I grew up. My parents still live there, so have very strong ties. My family's been in this lower Yakima, Lower East Side Yakima for the last 70 plus years. My grandparents lived here. So yeah, so currently I served on the council for a few years. That went pretty ups and downs, lots of, you know, drama going through the COVID timeframe and all the controversy there, you know, speaking my mind a little bit. So everything you say nowadays, if you say any kind of truth, it's viewed as an extremist viewpoint. So then after that, I mean, I was into woodworking for quite some time, and now I have do a lot of custom high-end luxury woodworking pieces for, you know, like Suncadia to Cleel or to Coeur d'Alene. And that's been my focus now is, you know, utilizing a lot of the resources that we have here, you know, all the old growths. Yakima's a tree city, and there's a lot of valuable wood here to make valuable products, and that's what I've been doing now.
Yeah, I kind of thought maybe you're going to bring us in like a table.
Yeah, you might need one.
It's going to bring us a table. We're going to use it to advertise for his business. So it'd be the podcast table. So, and all of his social media links are all in the description of the video. And we'll pull those up in a few minutes to kind of show you some of his work. He's on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. I don't know if there's a website or not. But so when you were on the city council, you said a lot of your, just in your opinion, talking truths kind of creates a almost like a bigotry point of view from others that disagree, or is that the narrative that was created? I know there was some beef between you and, I don't want to butcher her name,
Sonea Lund,
yeah. Yeah. Where she, I guess, claimed that you were basically harassing her personally and tried to get a protection order against you, which ultimately was shot down by the Yakima courts. What was behind that?
Well, I exposed her on her corruption. She had voicemail or, you know, voice recordings of her basically saying that she was blackmailed by an organization to, you know, censure me for my role. The council had censured me for saying some things. Like I think it started by me coming out and saying that I was for the Idaho legislation that were banning males from playing female sports, you know, and then it just went off from there. The LGBTQ community, this lady that runs that, a straight woman running the LGBTQ community, she came out and said I should be kicked off a council because of it. And I said she was an idiot. So they posted that. And so then there was worldwide articles about how I was transphobic and this and that. And then Sonea got into it because she was just very dirty. I was calling her out at council meetings for all the nasty stuff that she does, trying to sleep with everybody's boyfriends and, you know, and girlfriends.
You know, I saw an interview. Well, I didn't see, not an interview. I saw a clip. I guess you did an interview or KIT did something on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we actually had Lance tore me on here. I don't know.
Yeah.
Lance actually said, he spoke highly of you, by the way.
Yeah. Lance is a good guy. No.
But we saw some of the clip on there and it didn't seem like it went very far, but basically it was you saying just that. You're talking about adultery and whatnot from her part. So she's married?
she was married with her husband at the time.
Okay.
And just running out doing drugs and everything else and partying it up and, you know, telling everybody that she's going to suck off the governor to get whatever she wants and this and that. And so she got, I guess her move was to file completely false allegations, like 100% made up. They just change every time too, that she told the story about how some guy approached her coming out of her work that said that Jason White sent her to, like, I have goons.
Or like your lynchman?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it didn't go anywhere, obviously, but, you know, you have to wait your 2 weeks and you have these, you know, all the media runs with it, of course, and they play it up like it's something real, like it's not completely fabricated because they're all, you know, leftists and they believe all that kind of crap, you know, so.
I imagine if it were real. And not saying it was or wasn't because I wasn't there, but if it were factually be able to prove that it was real, what she was stating, then the protection order probably would have stood, would not have been dismissed, I'd imagine.
Yeah. I mean, there was absolutely no proof of it whatsoever or no inclination whatsoever that it was real. And they just tried to throw everything at me, like every Facebook post I've ever written that it was a threat towards her physically or something like that, that right. It didn't go anywhere.
And this whole thing with you and the media and the viewpoint of how you kind of, how it transcended into from what it started out as you becoming transphobic and all these other things, this went far beyond just Yakima.
Yeah.
It seemed like other areas were doing stories on this. I saw stories out of Seattle. I think I even saw stories out of maybe some other states.
Yeah. Even Pink News out of London, England or something did an article on it. So they just run with the same stories and just keep printing them over, just like they do with the Mockingbird media and all things. So once they find that person, the token, you know, what they call white supremacist, bigot, whatever all these terms that they give, they run with that person just to prove their point on what the world is and kind of reiterate their beliefs on the world.
So now we live in a very, very interesting cultural time. Obviously, it's different than it's ever been before, good or bad, whatever people's views are. We can all agree that it's completely different. Somebody, how did this, do you have a family? Are you married, kids, anything like that?
Yeah, I have two girls and girlfriend, one on the way.
So, okay.
Yeah, January 6th is my...
You say a girlfriend on the way?
A girlfriend with a baby on the way.
Okay, got to make sure. Clarify. Yeah. So was this, how did this affect your personal life? I mean, this is a small town, small city. I don't even know if it's city, town, whatever you want to call it. Yakima is not a big area.
Yeah, I mean, this whole...
And you stick out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Definitely do. It was intense, you know, like, you know, there was attacks on my family and people threatening me and threatening my girlfriend, trying to attack her more because she's probably more susceptible to, you know, threats or to people coming at her with different, you know, stuff online and reading it, because I didn't read any of it, but the ones that were coming at me personally, because they have these like these basically hate groups that they send your information to, and then they go after you through your business and through your personal life and your friends and family. And they track everybody down that's related to you or close to you and send them nasty messages and do negative reviews on everything you do. And so they really try to go after you. It's declined. I mean, obviously I don't get it anymore, but yeah, it was pretty intense there for a while, you know, I mean, but I was willing to endure that and to go through it just so other people could see it and to realize that if you don't stand up, it's going to get a lot worse.
What was your main goal with running on the city council? What was it you were trying to achieve in the end?
Just, you know, when I was running, I was sitting down there. I'm like, these people on city council aren't saying anything. Like they'd go on the news and they'd speak and they weren't saying anything. I'm like, nobody is saying anything whatsoever. Anything of importance, they would say anything about anything. I'm like, there needs to be somebody just speaking the truth there and putting things straightforward and just, you know, representing what the average person would be thinking, doing, and saying.
So I consider myself the average person. And a lot of the things that I'm new to this area. So I come in here with like green as green can be. And it seems to me that there seems to be issues with an overwhelming presence of like the homeless population, seems to be an underwhelming surveillance from police, firefighters. A lot of these fires, I heard they even went further and defunded and decommissioned some of the fire departments even more recently, as we're in a time where fires are popping up left and right. Is this something that you pay attention to? And are these things even dealt with in this type of at this level?
Yeah. 75% of the city budget is fire and police, you know, so that's almost besides that. I mean, like, I mean, yeah, you just give it, you give them a budget and you tell them what your objectives are and you, you know, what you want to clean up. But then again, a lot of their hands are tied, and the fire department has always been a political situation. They're always pushing politically to get more money, to get those extra things that they want, making it sound a lot worse.
Okay.
Even if we've agreed upon what they want and everything like that, we had a really bad union rep, and he would put out negative stuff against the council all the time to get public support and try to dramatize the situation too. So a lot of it is just political theater, you know, because the police department gets what, $32 million a year, over 50% of our budget. And then the 25% goes to, you know, fire. And then the rest of the city is ran off of a very small portion of that, you know, with everything, pools and streets and everything that we do.
With the homeless, with the homeless thing going on here, where they seem to be really kind of overwhelming areas. You know, my kids are grown now, but if I had younger children, I really wouldn't feel comfortable with them playing in any of the local parks. Not because I'm so afraid of them getting abducted. I'm more afraid of them stepping on like a needle, or even witnessing eyeballs on these individuals that are scoundering around naked, taking dumps in the yard. How is this addressed throughout some of these committees? Was it online or behind the tape?
Yeah, like, I mean, we started like the Clean City program, where, you know, like cleaning up, because I live on South Natchez Ave. I live on the 200 block, which is one block south of the gate of the place that the Moyers had gated up. They had the entire Natchez Park Ave gated up so the people wouldn't be on in close to their buildings. And they had the political pull, the will to do such a thing. But so now they just hang out in front of my house, and there's probably a dozen of them. And, you know, dumpster worth of garbage on a daily basis. You know, they don't pose any threat to me or my family. They kind of stick to their own world, really, personally. But that problem is definitely way beyond what any city is ever going to do, because it's a drug problem.
Right.
You know, and that's what we have to look at. And I don't think that, and looking at it from, you're not going to solve it from fixing a strung out druggie, you know, you're fixing it from the ground up. And so, like, you're only going to change the, like, your best option and your best dollar, your bang for your buck is save, you know, going, getting the kids while you can, getting them before they get to that point.
Right.
You know, the police can only do so much. Their hands are tied. You know, the state, I mean, you basically.
Doesn't seem like the police are really allowed to do anything.
No, like their hands are so tied. Like the bureaucracy and everything is so buried that nobody has an ability to do the right thing anywhere in government.
Not to mention a police officer. I don't know if you could pay me enough money to be a police officer as, you know, I'm just as a white man in today's culture, where I'd be afraid to pull certain people over of saying, you know, as you know, you get identified as something, or somebody makes a claim of something, and that spreads like wildfire throughout the media. Next thing you know, you're the white racist cop pulling, you know, for no reason. Does that have, like, being the temperature that we're in right now in 2023, do you feel that the racial division it's more divided now than it was 20 years ago?
Only with some people. They've been pushing it. The powers that be have definitely been pushing a racial divide, but it's also backfiring on them now too, because everybody's now they're speaking up. Because at first you just had the extremists speaking out on it. And they were the voice of everybody. Right. So they were the ones on the mics. They had all the mics and they had everything. And everyone else was like kind of being quiet about it because they didn't want to get canceled. They didn't want to be the first one to stick their head up and get whacked.
No, nobody wants to be the first.
No, but now, I mean, like, I was the first. And so now a lot more people are sticking up and like, it's not that. Like, you cannot, like Lil Wayne saying, you know, stand up and like, there, we do not have a race is the problem. He's like, the white people saved me when I was dying. If I look out in my concert, it's all white people. It's not black people. And so it's just, there's this propaganda, like some people buy it, but the thinking man and person is not buying it, and they don't believe it's true. And it's, I think if anything, it's woken a lot of people up to take action and to not let the crazy people, because that's what they are. They're mentally ill people that are pushing these delusional
narratives
that are, you know, there's a lot of problems, but they're blaming the wrong thing. You know, they're blaming racism when it's there are systemic problems that are affect everybody, and it doesn't really affect your color so much. You know,
how did you go from woodworking into politics? I mean, you've always stuck with woodworking, but how did you really get into politics here in Yakima?
I was living at my mom's house, and the position came up in District 2, and I lived in District 2. It was 80% Hispanic district, and so they readjusted that ACLU lawsuit to basically, like, to straightforward give Latinos an opportunity to be on city council, or to basically secure their victory no matter what on the city council. So here I am, Jason White of all people, that running in District 2, and I win by close to 80%.
Yeah, I said it was a pretty big landslide that you yeah. won by. Like, I think it was like 76%.
Against a Latino that has a degree in political science, you know? And so he was everything that should have been mm-hmm. perfect for that, you know? But he was resting on his
credentials.
His credentials, and it didn't work for him. I went out there and worked harder than he did. And that's, you know, that's what it's always about, is working harder than your opponent. If they have especially if they have the leg up on you, and, you know, you can't just sit back and rest on your credentials.
Do you come from any kind of background in politics, like debate in school or anything like that? Or was this purely like, fuck it, I'm going to go for it?
No, I've always just spoke my mind and had an opinion on stuff. And so, no, I was not from a political family whatsoever. Politics was never a thing. I can't even stand to listen to a political station. I think they have some kind of noise distraction thing going on there. I can't even stand for it to be on in the background.
When you say noise distraction, do you mean almost like subliminal
hate fire, get you fired up kind of thing going on? Cause I can't even listen to it in the background. Yeah. Just whatever they got going on is meant to kind of agitate. I can perceive that.
How did you end up getting in this with the Rain Shadow Report? Cause this seems to be it's about as unbiased as you can get for at least this area.
Yeah.
And I know they've, you know, I met somebody from there. We don't want to say his name, but I met a gentleman from here who actually is willing to come on here. We'll wait till he comes on and say his name. But he made it very clear that they almost demonized him as like a cult leader. And is that just because he's raising awareness and having people ask questions to where people are poking their heads out of the sand and realizing it's not just...
Yeah, because there's only been so many people in politics. It was like the Herald and Bruce Smith, you know?
Right.
And that was it. Like, that's the two parties you have, like the Herald running their pieces and supporting who they support, and then Bruce Smith supporting who he supports.
I can only think of Buffalo Bills every time I hear Bruce Smith.
Yeah, he runs the Business Times.
Okay.
And so a smaller newspaper, but he's very involved politically, and he kind of backs, and he helped me campaign and run, and kind of gave me the strategy and, you know, told me what I needed to do. And I went out there and did it, and, you know, I won.
So what was the issue where, I know they had a big issue where they said you were getting paid up by the council, but you didn't show up for like an entire year. What's the story behind that? And is, in your opinion, is that fair? Is there more to that story?
Well, yeah, that was when the shutdown happened. And then council was really like, they just took it. Like, everybody took these shutdowns as a way to kind of just completely dismantle everyone's rights and their abilities for everything. They just took away all your rights. They took away everything. They canceled the council meeting, so nobody could show up. It was all by phone. Nobody could speak their mind against anything. So the public was left out of all meetings. And I'm like, if the public can't even be there, like, I'm not going to be there. Like, this is just like a mock meeting. Now we're completely behind closed doors doing all this stuff, and you guys are changing the rules daily. So there was no rules. There's no structure. There's no more game at that point. So they were just making up the rules as they went. I'm like, we cannot sit here and allow this to happen. So if everyone's going to allow it to happen, I'll sit back and I will protest in not going. I mean, yeah, I was saying that was a big part of the point of not going, is there's a major problem with this that I cannot go for 2 years and there's nothing you can do about it. Like, that has to change.
It is pretty fucking scary to know that you weren't going, but yet they couldn't stop from paying. You were still, the money still came in.
Yeah. And that had to be known. That has to be known that, like, literally, I don't even have to show up and there's nothing that we can do about it as people.
Right.
That is absurd. Like, the fact that nobody's doing anything about that, they wrote some articles and like, they blame it on me. You know, of course. I mean, yeah, I'm the one that kept it going and stood my ground and wouldn't back down even if people that supported me at first hated me for it. Well, that's the system that we operate in. Mm-hmm. So if you're not willing to stand up and do something about it, even to me, if you want to do something to me, that's fine. That's right. Better than you just sitting there and allowing this stuff to keep going, because you're the one that's perpetuating this.
I don't think anybody even would have been aware that if you just decided not to show up, that there was nothing that could be done to stop somebody from getting paid from funds for this.
Yeah.
You know, so that is pretty, I mean, how, regardless, whatever people will say, your motive is one thing, you'll have your own version of your motive. But the reality is that's a problem that exists, and there should be something in place to be able to hold people accountable.
Yeah, and there's no accountability whatsoever, unless there's somebody like me that just holds people accountable like I did and call the truth. But there's no way for the public to hold anybody. They say, okay, you're re-election in 4 years or whatever, but there's no way to hold anybody accountable, really. I mean, it takes the majority of the council, and like the only thing you can hold accountable is the city manager. Like the only person that we hold accountable is the city manager. One person. That's it. That's right. All the accountability you have. And so you have to have the majority there to do that.
What's the point of the meetings?
Just to rubber stamp agenda, big, huge packets that were given to you by city staff that they wrote up that they know nothing about.
So is it more of just like a protocol that you have to go through? You have to go through these hoops before money can be dispersed? So
it's all procedure. It's okay. All procedure. And if you break procedure, you're horrible, because that's what they try to do. They try to lock you in on procedure so you can never have any rational thought or get anything rationally done.
You know, my girlfriend has told me several times that I should get into to small city like politics and stuff, and because of just abruptly speaking views. And I've told her, for exactly what I've seen you deal with, and I don't know anything about you, and I don't know if you're the devil or if you're the second coming. I don't know, but I do know that it's not something that my family would not be prepared to handle that kind of backlash. And that's what I try to tell her. It's like, it's not just going to be me that's getting skeletons dug up on. They're going to be going to your work. They're going to be going to your mom's house. They're going to be calling my children, you know, saying, you know, and that's what you've went through. And would you do it? If you could do it all over again, would you do it again? Would you do it differently? Or what advice would you have for the younger you?
Well, there's a lot of ways. For the younger me, for everybody, I'll just speak generally, because sure, I would do it again. But I think there's, for the average person, they have to realize there's a lot of ways to take on the corruption, and because it's all procedure. So if you know procedure, you can beat them at their own game. So you have to beat them. You have to know what the game is first, like especially with the court systems. Like if there's something going on, you have to know how judges work and how attorneys work and speak. Like I beat 5 cases through this. I had to go to court 5 different times to beat 5 different cases that had to deal with this whole process.
Were all the cases civil, or were there any criminal cases ever launched?
No, I think they're all civil. Okay. Yeah, they would all be civil. Yeah. Yeah. No criminal cases. They're all civil cases, but I beat all of them for trying to kick me off council, whatever that was. That didn't go anywhere too, because like they tried to kick me off for questioning the governor, which is my job. But as far as like for the average person that wants to do something, first they need to be knowledgeable on what they want to accomplish and be able to go in there. And like, if it's a day-to-day thing on council, the squeaky wheel gets the grease in politics. So if you're the squeaky wheel, you're going to get heard, because a lot of people are like, well, they won't do anything. Yeah, they might not do anything the first time, but if you keep doing it and keep saying something about it, something will get done, because the people, the staff in City Hall, they want to serve the city. The council members want to do good. You know, everybody wants to do good that's there generally. I mean, some people have ulterior motives. But if you're willing to get involved with it on any level, like everybody should be involved with it on some level, like to speak their mind. If there's something that agitates you and that gets you fired up, you should look into that thing and figure out, how do I make my mark on that? Or how do I make a dent on that? If everybody did that, we would be fine, because nobody does anything to make a dent on that particular thing. And to learn on, you know, do I go to a meeting here, or do I speak up here, or do I sue somebody, you know, like, because suing the city and suing police officers or whatever, if people are actually doing something bad, it's very easy in government.
Right.
They settle quick.
Does it seem like it's a pretty normal thing for, I'm assuming there's more people than openly speak about it that share similar views to you, but they won't openly talk about it because what it might do to their business, to their person, to who they are, to surroundings, to their social media life. Yeah. How much of that is frustrating to the point where it's people will never really do what they need to do because they're too afraid to be the first person to stick their head out of the hole?
Yeah, like, I mean, that's just human nature. People are going to do it when they're, you know, like we're 7 meals away from a revolution at all times. until you miss that seventh meal, you're not going to do anything, you know? And that's where people are. We're there right now. People have had enough and people are starting to stand up, but it was very frustrating to see because I put it all on the line. I knew that though, from the very beginning, I knew that I was stepping into it. I was going to step into it deeply because I just knew that if I said anything out of line, you know, you could already, even the undertones were there early on.
Right.
Because they were going after Trump for everything back then too. So
seems like they still are.
Yeah. Obviously. Yeah.
It's like an indictment every other day.
Yeah.
It's taken the fear. I'm a federal prison consultant. I went to federal prison. I was federally indicted in 2011, went to prison for 42 months. I worked for a doctor that was overprescribing pain medication. Ultimately, I took ownership, did what I had to do. And now I work with individuals going into the system. But hearing the word indictment is supposed to be a scary word. They're now throwing it around, I think, misleading people. Most people get indicted, they're going to go to prison. I personally think this is just a make you look left when you should be looking right to kind of scare the shit out of people come, you know, next year to kind of have, because this will be in the forefront. Everything's happening now is going to be really in the focus come 2000 next year during election times. But when you see this stuff happening, and it can happen to anybody that goes against a narrative, it's kind of scary. I think it really does put fear into people going, fuck, do I really, you know, I'm not Trump. You know, everyone's saying, oh, they must be broke. They hired bail bondsmen. I'm curious as to why Rudy Giuliani and Trump used a bondsman and didn't just bond out. But I don't know if you follow that at all.
Not much. Okay. I mean, it's everywhere. So,
right.
You know, but. No, I do think that those tactics are used to, you know, to whip somebody in public so other people don't do it. And, you know, like, but there's a lot of other ways to go about making change. And, you know, you don't have to be the loudest voice in the room always, you know, like I was willing to be that person to kind of give people permission to be themselves. You know, that was a big thing for me too, is to give people permission. And they're not going to hurt you that bad because, like, now we live in a world that if you do take a stand, your business is blowing up. Obviously now, like, right. You know, you come out and you say something pro Trump or something like that, and everyone thinks they're going to cancel you. And in turn, they 10X their business or something, because there's enough support now. Like, there's way more conservatives and way more.
What do you consider yourself?
Maybe a constitutionalist.
Okay.
You know, I'm definitely not left or right. I don't agree with the foundation of these arguments. You know, I mean, if you want to start talking about getting rid of the Federal Reserve, I'm all for it.
Right.
You know, if we want to go back to the basics, I think we have to go back to the basics.
Cryptocurrency.
I mean, as long as the federal government doesn't have all the authority and printing right. all the money, then that's fine. But cryptocurrencies are better than an unbacked fiat currency that has no ledgers that we can
look into.
Authenticate. Yeah.
I was just going to ask you something. I'll skip that. I forgot where I was going to go with that. I actually had somewhere we're going to go with that. With everything going on. So I know what I was going to talk about. So funny enough, I again found out today what you do aside from politics. I found out you're into woodworking, and that's, we spoke about this a few minutes ago. I was like, oh, this other guy we know, Kenton.
Yeah.
Who's what's it called again? Norse woodworking. And I asked him if he knew you and said, you guys actually used to be partners at a time prior, I guess up until COVID. Right.
Yeah.
And his was basically you stopped coming into work through COVID. And then after COVID passed, you came back in and something on lawns fired you, and you guys fought over the name, and you ended up keeping the name, and you've used credit cards to go buy stuff that you weren't authorized to purchase. Is there any truth to any of that?
I mean, that's his perspective, but the reality is I brought him into everything. I brought him into, taught him how to do woodworking, brought him into politics. He ran for District 1, lost. He's lost every race he's ever ran. He's lost every race he's ever helped with in politics. He's never won anything. I started the business. I let him have 50% of the business, taught him how to do it all. He was supposed to be the salesman. I was the designer and builder of all the furniture. We got into it and, you know, it was like, yeah, we were really launching hard about right on COVID day. We were doing the home and garden show at the fair. And that's the day that everything got shut down. Like, we literally had brought all of our stuff in, had like 6 booths and brought all of our tables in there to set up. And then they closed it that day. You know, we kept going with the business and expanding and, you know, doing what we could do. But then, you know, he started just going off the deep end. They were him and a guy that he had working there were drunk all the time. He was bringing his dog in, biting people. I think he bit over a dozen people, arguing, yelling. And I'm just like, I would come in there. I built everything. I mean, I built 90% of the stuff that was there and that kept us alive and that kept us floating and stuff like that. And his job was to sell it. So I built everything, and then he would just kept going off the deep end. As the further we got into things, he just kept sliding off the deep end, and, you know, and there was no coming back. And I was like, you can have everything, you know, like, I didn't build this for me. I built this to start the you know, pride of building kind of thing. And he just wanted to whip things out and just get them done and not take any pride there. And, you know, I never took a dollar from the business whatsoever, ever. Never took a dime from the business. Like, when I was in Vegas, I used $186 for some stuff I needed to put on credit or on debit, you know. And then I put the money back in, which he would do on a daily basis. He would go out to restaurants every day, like on a regular basis, go out to eat and spend whatever he wanted, try to take people out on the company dime and fill up his gas tank all the time. And I wasn't taking a dime. And so we try to, you know, use that, but it's not real. I mean, if I didn't put the money back in, it's fine. He was doing it on a daily basis. So I just walked away. I gave him everything with the business. Gave him, like, we had over $50,000 in pieces there, plus all the wood and the history. And I learned, because he was getting, you know, like around that time, 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago in that summer, he was getting really bad, just screaming at the top of his lungs whenever I'd go in there. And so I started doing some research, and then I found out that we hadn't even had a business for 8 months. I called the state, and I was like, because he wouldn't give me the records, because I was like, well, show me the books, as he was doing all the books, and he wouldn't give me the books. So he wouldn't give me the information. He was trying to tell me we did X, Y numbers. I'm like, that obviously I can calculate more than that in my head real quick. And I can see that that's false information. So then I called the state, and they're like, yeah, you guys didn't renew your license 8 months ago. It expired 8 months ago. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? What do I need to do? And she's like, you can do whatever you want. You can start a new one, or you can reinstitute that one. I was like, okay, well, I'll start a new one with with the Yakima Reclaimed. And because we was 50-50 partners before then, but everything was now up in the air. And he was, you know, threatened to call the cops on me. He tried to literally lock me out of the shop, change the keys and all this stuff. And then he filed a restraining order against me. And then I filed one against him after that, because he was harassing me nonstop. Like, I had all the text messages, and the judge was like, yeah, he's definitely harassing you, but it doesn't quite meet my expectation. So we'll just let this go. And then, you know, and he kept using my name and my projects that I had personally built after that. And he's still using my name to this day to try to get business, because my products and everything I do is far superior, you know, to what he does. So he still tries to piggyback on everything that I do. And he's been standing on my shoulders since he met me, to get involved in politics and all that, and woodworking, and everything that he knows and says that he's doing is literally all my ideas. It's like somebody stole my life and is pretending to be me. It's very strange. It's, you know, it's.
And you're claiming that still happens to this day.
Yeah. He's still, I mean, like if you type up Norse Woodworking right now, we'll say Yakima Reclaimed right there. The first line says Yakima Reclaimed.
Wow.
Like, go on his Instagram and it'll say Yakima Reclaimed, and he's hashtagging Yakima Reclaimed on everything just to use my credibility and everything that I've built,
right,
to try to steal some customers that are rope-a-doped into thinking that they're getting high quality when they get, you know, the Wish version of it.
Tony, we'll have to have Kenton on next to hear his side of the story. Yeah. I heard there was some issues with Downtown Summer Nights, or not Downtown Summer Nights, Downtown Yakima, where they had an issue with him or something. They didn't want him to come in there and have a booth, or couldn't have a booth anywhere.
He's banned almost everywhere he goes. He can't go in anywhere. They wouldn't, like, the city has like open positions everywhere, volunteer positions. He can't even get on one of those. Like, nobody wants him anywhere. He's just poisonous, you know? So yeah, he can't, he's probably blocked from anything.
Wow.
What is it? Blacklisted. Yeah. He's blacklisted. he's.
So your main focus now is Yakima Reclaim. That's, do you have a place you do this out of?
I just have a private shop that I work out of, and it's mostly online. And because I'm,
let's see, so pull up some of the social media, Tony, while he's explaining it.
Yeah. So I have a private shop that I work out of. It's only like 1,000 square feet, but I do a lot of, like, most of my pieces are commissioned for, you know, like luxury mountainous type homes.
Open up some of those photos.
Yeah, there's like that one. Yeah, that table is going to Tri-Cities.
And these are also reclaimed as from reclaimed trees.
Well, the reclaimed is like, yeah, these are mostly hardwoods that come out of Yakima that are cut down.
Okay.
And so a lot of times, when the city cuts these down, they're going to the dump. Yeah. So that was just a rehab project. So I do a lot of rehab projects and just taking them on.
Do you have any, or is any of your stuff, any of like the restaurants, bars?
Yeah, that's how I first started. I did like the very first job we did was a tap.
The tap, that's a bar. Go to his Instagram, Tony.
Yeah, the tap downtown. I did all their tables, design and build all their tables. And I did the beer den too.
Oh, you did the beer den?
Yeah. Hmm. I built their whole bar out. I built their actual bar and their tables and stuff.
That's funny, huh, Tony?
Oh yeah, they hate me too.
I think we were told somebody else, but I didn't.
They tried. Yeah, they tried to like erase all my name off of there and everything, because everything was stamped. And so they tried to accuse, like, we did it for free.
I'm pretty sure they said, aren't they under the Kenton? I'm pretty sure Kenton told me he did. So that's you?
The one that built that, he was with me back then.
Okay. So you guys were together at that
point. Yeah. We were still together, but I built all that. Okay. Yeah. I built all of their stuff and.
That right there.
Yeah. That's a that world. Nice. Yeah. That's a home in Coeur d'Alene. That's by the preserve at Gotham Bay where.
Are you a fan of like the resin? How do you.
I hate resin. I work with it. There's resin in that, like, you know, some filler resin. Yeah, there's some.
I think I liked resin the first time I saw it, but then I have an interest in this as like at some point in a hobby. Once I have a big enough garage, like kind of do it for like a hobby. Don't worry, I'll never be your competition.
Oh, no. No, I love
I'm too lazy.
I love people doing
but
it.
But I started seeing every YouTube video and TikTok that was doing it. It was just like 10% wood, 90% resin.
Yeah.
For the color, but it kind of, to me, it took away from some of the, I get you probably have to do it some of the wood because it's maybe rotted out to an extent.
Yeah. There's some, if you close that out, like there's one a while back that I did a like a double river, but then I put a fire feature in the center and water features on the outside. It's down a little ways, but like, yeah, like I do hand railings. We do a lot of metal work, fabrication, you know, bars.
Go a little bit slower, Tony. Let's look for one, some resin in it.
Yeah, it's been a while because I don't really like to. I think it might be a little bit because I do a lot of projects here. Even the small stuff you see here, the planters and that kind of stuff. Yeah, you see a little bit of resin in my work. I usually like to square things up and make them more modern finished. So I do minimal resin work.
So let's go up to a normal size table right here. Click on this one, Tony. So like to me, that would be like an awesome podcast table. What would something like that cost? To give people, because I have an idea from talking to you guys now, but for somebody who has no idea.
That one, I'm actually selling that one for $3,000.
So $3,000.
Yeah. That's a lower end 8-foot table is probably $3,000.
Okay.
Yeah. Cause they could go up to, you know, they could be in the 20s for a 10-foot real thick, nice black walnut figured, you know,
right.
Table. Yeah. So generally like my table, like a table would probably like the entry level for me is like $1,500 for the most basic, you know, not basic, but they're still luxury, well done, you know, high craftsmanship pieces.
I was just going to ask, is most of the cost associated with the craftsmanship or is most of the cost associated to like what you're spending to get this recycled like, wood? I don't even know what the term is.
Yeah. It's, you know, a lot of the cost, the base cost is definitely in the labor, like the, yeah, when you start going up in price for the same size of a table, that's the wood. You know, if you get some, you know, more of a luxury wood, it's going to cost more and it's heavier and thicker because that's a big part too, is like the black walnut could be twice as heavy as something like this poplar. So like a 10-foot table, you might need several guys to lift it up too and manhandle it every time you move it.
Because this is solid wood.
Yeah, solid two inch plus thick wood.
Right.
So like that one's not too heavy because it's poplar and that's a lighter wood, but.
How did you get into this? How did you get into wood making?
Well, I was doing like at first it started out as a lot of that like old barn wood reclaim stuff, you know, but that was, you know, I was doing a lot of the barn wood, you know, making little stands and stuff like that, but they were, the retail on those was so low that it was like, you know, a few $100 or something like that. But right. It was like, took so much work to pull all the nails out and strip all that wood and make it legitimate, you know, because I've always kind of been there, like utilizing in my mindset, it's utilizing whatever resources I have available, mm-hmm. you know, and just making the best thing you can, doing the best with what you have. And so that's what got me into it. And then I was like, I was looking online and like these tables and shelves were 10, 15, 20 grand. I'm like, I could build those.
Right.
You know? And I'm like, why not? Why would I want to build a $1,500 shelf when I could build a $15,000 shelf and be proud of it too? Yeah. You know, like you're, and cause, and that's what really got me away from building the cheaper stuff was when I would build something really nice, you know, it'd be a few $100 and somebody would throw it outside and it would be trashed, you know, the next time I saw it. So I'm like,
is it like watching your artwork be destroyed?
Yeah. Cause to me it's functional art, you know?
Right.
And they're all a piece of art. So for me, it's just like a travesty to do that, to put all that time and energy into it. So charging more and to build, like, is it's such a niche clientele too. It's like, you know, there's a lot of people that live up. I mean, like in Sun Katy, there's several 1500 homes maybe or something like that. And everybody there can afford my pieces, no problem. But in Yakima, there's not too many people used to paying those higher end prices because we probably don't have any luxury furniture stores.
Right.
But if you get outside of Yakima, there's a lot of those buyers, and I've really established a reputation to where people are referring people to me now. So
we had a lot of high end furniture stores and like kind of woodworking furniture stores in South Florida, like boutique type shops. And you'd walk in, you'd look at something that, you know, it looked like similar to that little coffee table over there. And you look at a price tag and it's like 15 grand.
Yeah.
And it's hard to wrap your mind around when you're used to walking through like rooms to go.
Yeah. Know, it's a different world. Like people have sticker shock. Cause I know my clients when they message me, because if they message me and the first question is how much is something like this?
Right.
That's not my clientele. My clientele want what they want. They already know.
Right. They already know.
They already know it's a big hefty price tag and that it's going to be what they want. Like people, like that's what I'm trying to do is just build to what people want. The people that can't afford those luxury items instead of just cranking things out.
Right. So is that all you do now? That's the full-time gig?
Yeah, for money. I mean, I was doing some personal training too, because I did some bodybuilding shows and, you know, I won one, you know, a master's over 40, but
that was here.
It was in Federal Way. I did that because I ended up doing that for my 40th birthday. So it was my 40th birthday. I was born in Federal Way.
Okay.
So I figured it was a sign to go back there and, you know, get in my birthday suit basically and get on stage for.
How old are you now?
41. I'll turn 41 in a few days.
Okay.
Next month.
Soon to be happy birthday.
Yeah.
We just joined a gym, the Wrecking. It's over on Front Street. Have you ever seen the big building? It's got all the graffiti on it. It's like the big warehouse. There's a eyeglass company in the front of it. And he's just opened a new gym in there. When I say new gym, I shouldn't say new gym. This is like the gym of gyms of gyms. Go back on Instagram. I'm going to show him real quick just because he's into this. It should be up there. Over on Instagram, and then hit on the search button on the left, Tony, and it should be, there it is, right there, the top one. So let's see if there's a full basketball court in there. See if there's any pictures of some of the gym.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But we're getting ready to do some stuff. He's actually coming in tomorrow for an interview. You would like this guy. He knows of you. I told him we were interviewing you, and he said, but it's a very like, there's no AC in there. You go in there to get it in. You fucking work. And you're done. You know, it bay doors open up. It's just very kind of, I don't know, something picture like out of the 80s. So yeah, if you ever want to come take a look at it, but yeah, awesome, he'll be in tomorrow. Yeah, it's a great location. He owns the whole building, you know. Really? So he's able to do things. That's actually a great view.
That's where I'd like to be right there. So
where'd you point at?
There's a shop there.
Tony, like, go back to that picture you were just on.
Yeah, there's a shop. This is an old woodworking shop that just opened up.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so I really want to be in that neighborhood too. Yeah, that's where I'm trying to get into that area because I want to have a public shop. But yeah, that area is pretty ideal too, especially with the graffiti in the background and everything like that, bringing tables over there to do photo shoots or something like that.
Yeah, that's how we ended up finding about this place. You know, what's it called? Pizza and Brute? No. On 3rd and...
Knob Hill.
Yeah. So the graffiti with Ninja Turtles and stuff on there now?
Yeah.
I was driving here and I saw the guy out there graffitiing it. So I went over there after he left. For all I knew, he was there illegally. I don't want to, you know, to me, I still relate from being a kid. It's gang members. I'm not going to get shot. So I waited till he left. I went over and looked at his IG tag on there. His name is Fazer, F-A-Z-E-R. So he actually rents space from the guy that owns the gym. He gave him a loft upstairs. So the owner of the gym, his name is Craig. He saw Fazer working on another building and Craig's a big, giant, older white dude. Like he looks like somebody like the Hulk coming at you. So Fazer got a little like, oh God, this guy. So he really wanted Fazer to do his whole building. And that's how they ended up meeting. And that's how we ended up meeting. And we've been just doing some really, really cool interviews and getting to, it's weird how we've like finding you through accident. I'm walking into my office and I see some guy bringing tables out. Like they're moving out. And I'm like, fuck, maybe they need more. Cause I've got some tables that we want to get rid of. So I'm trying to give them away. Starts talking about what they do. And he starts showing me magazines. And I was like, dude, how do we get this guy on the air? And here you are. So Jason, is there anything that you want people to know about you that they don't know? Somebody sees you in the street. Are they spitting on you? Are they saying hi to you? Or is it kind of died down?
No, everywhere I go, people love me. Like, I mean, it's didn't have the effect that the people against me wanted it to have. Like, throughout this entire thing, I've had like two people say something negative to me in the streets, you know, or out and about. And that was one lady that said I killed her grandma for, you know, protesting the COVID lockdown. And then some jeez, big, huge white liberal guy with a tiny purple Converse on. And, you know, that was it. Everybody else is weak. They're so weak. I mean, that's the thing is, like, as soon as you expose them, you realize that Geppetto behind the scenes is just this tiny little ant that you could crush at any time.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid of the ants. Like, they're cockroaches. Like, as soon as you turn on the light, they run. So, you know, like, it's easy to expose them. And now they have, you know, they're running right now. So it's our time to step up and speak your truth and to say what you need to say and, you know, take action. You know, that's what people need to do is just take action and become knowledgeable on all the things that you were told were conspiracy theories your whole life.
Chemtrails.
Yeah.
Are they real? I think they are.
Well, they're obviously real.
Real in the ass. Is it, do you, this will be the last hand.
Yeah.
Cause I don't want people to think you're some conspiracy.
Oh, I'm 100% conspiracy theorist. So,
but I grew up with chemtrails in Florida, seeing them very heavily. And I remember watching Prince on, it's either Jay Leno or David Letterman, Prince, the fucking artist, formerly known as.
Yeah.
He started talking about chemtrails and how they're releasing these dangerous gases that are for a combination of mind control, making you dependent on pharmaceutical type drugs, diminishing our own immune system, which when I started to do my research on it, a lot of these planes, and they really did kind of explain the difference between a chemtrail versus a contrail.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people think they're one and the same.
Yeah.
You know, contrails are kind of like when I write, I love Jesus in the sky. By the time they're done writing it, it's already dissipating.
Yeah.
Where a chemtrail just slowly forms into an artificial cloud.
And it's public information too, that all military people will talk about it, that they chaff the area that it's aluminum and there's all these other
aluminum bromide. Yeah.
There's all these harsh chemicals that are in everything now. And you can actually like test the samples too.
In the water.
And they're magnetized and they're, you know, the metallic, whatever they're spraying is metallic.
So funny. So, I feel there's magnets in my water bottle to pull certain stuff out of, to pull out of my water.
Yeah. And
Tony, nobody's ever going to come on here again. They're going to say we're fucking crazy.
No,
but we might be a little bit.
If you're not crazy right now, you are crazy.
And that's what the word woke, right? Me and my girlfriend talk about this because there's this new woke version of it. And to me, woke really is understanding that all this shit that's going on can't fucking last. Like we're seeing so many topics, we're seeing so many narratives being built, but when you really challenge somebody and get them to start talking about its core values, they'll usually abandon the conversation, verbally, physically attack you because they don't have much of a basis to argue from. Because it's not a screaming match. It's like, let's just, when you start talking about the actual points of how you got to where you're at, they're usually not able to explain.
Yeah. You can't explain their side because
there's no explanation.
There's no foundation there. There's no foundation on what they believe because they don't believe anything besides what they're told. And they don't want anybody doing their own thinking. And they'll tell you that they don't want anybody else doing their own thinking. And that's what you get in trouble for.
And 100% what they're saying they don't want to do is exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, they're doing all the stuff that they're accusing you of doing.
Right.
You know, with all the racism, all the discrimination, and, you know, they want segregation. They're pushing for segregation right now. And it's like the same stuff that the Democrats were doing back then, and they're doing it again.
Yep.
So it's, you know, and if you're not looking into things, that's what I want people doing is just looking into.
Do your research, man.
Do your research. And you're going to be shocked because everything that I was talking about 5-6 years ago that was conspiracy theory is all fact.
I try to use analogies a lot of the time just to kind of like drive the point home. So it's the biggest annoying thing I do. And to me, it's the only thing I can really do to kind of show my side of things. But it seems like a lot of people politically have their views the same way they pick like a sports team. Are you a fan of sports at all?
Not really.
Okay.
Yeah. So not like
diehard. So I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, but not to the point.
I grew up a Buffalo Bills fan. Yeah.
So I'm a Bills fan, not to the point where like I'm crying or breaking things, but I'm a Bills fan. Rain or shine, I'm a Bills fan. I shouldn't have that same perspective as like Democrat, Republican, neutral party, whatever you are. I shouldn't base it on, well, I've always been a Republican. I'm always going to be a Republican. I think it's okay to either admit that you didn't know what you were because you were just going through the motions of the way you were raised, your cognitions, behavioral patterns, areas you grew up in, to the point where we get to now, to where it's okay to say, hey, you know what? After doing some research, I might not agree with everything.
Yeah.
But
yeah, humans are very tribal. So, you know, we're a tribal species and like you have to get past that inclination of, hey, the tribe might not like me if I go against this issue, you know, and you have to have the backbone and like that's been
to be able to walk on your own.
Yeah. And like that spine and that backbone and be able to stand on your own 2 feet, especially for men, like to speak your opinion and to be thinkers, you know, they really have stripped that. The education system has intentionally stripped that out of people's ability to be thinkers too. Everybody in charge doesn't want a nation of thinkers. They want to
imagine if leaders really got together. Imagine if Trump wins the election or Biden wins the election or whatever next Tom, Dick and Harry runs. And they're like, you know what, Trump, I'm bringing you in. We're going to sit down. We're going to bring your followers, my followers. We're going to come to agreements. I'm sure you can define the difference between two party states and three party states pretty accurately. And we live in a two party state where it allows almost everything we see when it comes time for elections, no matter what side is pushing it, left or right, it's more of an attack on the other side than it is demonstrating what their accolades are and what they're going to do better. It's more of this person's going to ruin your country. This person likes to touch children. This person likes to grab them by the pussy. There's no actual people. There's a lot of people that say they voted for Biden because they hated Trump. They knew nothing about Biden, but they hated Trump that much and really didn't even really know what they hated about him.
No, and they tried to do that with me too when I was campaigning, and I was campaigning on issues. I said, here's this, and this is what I'm doing. And everybody can agree with that, no matter what skin color you are.
Right.
And they were campaigning on, you know, racial issues. And this guy has a picture with Trump, you know, and like this guy has I also had a picture with Bernie Sanders and
he also had
Gary
picture,
Johnson.
He had pictures with Oprah and he had pictures with Nelson Mandela.
Well, to me.
Oh, right. Gotcha.
Yeah, I had pictures with those guys.
Okay.
And so they were using those same issues back then and thought they were going to win based on hate and people's, you know, on hate, but the average person, that 80% in the middle, is concerned with issues.
Right.
They're concerned because the average person is concerned with this, you know, what's in front of their face,
right,
their sidewalk, their road, you know, gang issues.
Gas is what it is because we're all willing to pay the high prices. Imagine if everybody just maybe in Washington for one day didn't buy gas.
Yeah, it doesn't take much to collapse at all.
When we saw that in what country was that? Over in where they overthrew their government over in I don't know why it's going to elude my mind right now.
Sri Lanka?
No.
There's a few of them out there now.
it was a Spanish area. Not Portugal. Anyway,
Argentina. Yeah.
It might've been Argentina.
Yeah. There's
a few. They uprose, they band together and took back their government. It seems like it's such an easy thing to do, but we as people are very, very brainwashed.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? That's why I'm, and like, I was, you know, pushing things at first and frustrated, but I'm like, now I see people like coming around, like, and the people that would never have said this stuff to me 4 or 5 years ago are saying it to me now. Like, it's,
well, because now all the things that they wanted, they're the ones that can't afford to live anywhere. They're the ones that have to go work 3 jobs to make ends meet.
Yeah. But on every angle, the chemtrails, the programming, the school systems being horrible, like being indoctrination systems, the medical systems, you know, like all of that's being exposed at such a rapid rate right now. I'm ecstatic about the way things are going because, you know, ripping off that Band-Aid on every institution right now is fraudulent, basically. You know, so it's not just government, it's every institution, and government does control those institutions. But there's going to be a lot of growing pains, I think, in the next 10, 15, 20 years as people learn about all these things and kind of develop new ways of doing things, because that's what's going to happen is people are going to develop new ways to where they're outside of those realms. Because once you detach yourself from government, they no longer have the power. However you're going to do that, you know, like if you don't give them authority over you, they don't really have authority over you unless you commit a
right
an actual crime.
So. Which many crimes, there's as a convicted felon going through what I went through, we have clients that are getting indicted today for a felony that at the time of committing it, it wasn't a felony. Yeah. They passed a law bill a year later, making what they did then a felony, and they're able to go back, which is to me, you know, that's a whole nother conversation. But I think I'd love to have you back on. Maybe now that I can do some more research on you. I did as much research as I could in about 24 hours. And maybe we'll get Kent and you on the same time. I'll bring the pizza.
No, I'm not giving him that stage. Just
kidding. Jason, I really appreciate it, man. I think, look, people can love you or hate you, but you stand by your values. And I think when people in general do the right thing for the right reasons, usually everything else kind of works out in the end. So cheers to you, to your baby on the way. Congratulations. And guys, go check out him on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Everything is in the description of this video. And if you have any comments for this, drop a comment, drop a like, don't forget to subscribe. Lance Tormey says, you did a good job, by the way. He just sent me a message. He's watching. So he likes you, Lance. He does not like some others, powers it be. All right, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.